Jahau Tatcha Kalevaram. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord relinquished the body which he manifested to diminish the burden of the earth. Just like a magician, he relinquishes one body to accept different ones, like the fish incarnation, others. What is there? I didn't think it was there. Here's a peep. The Supreme Lord relinquished the body which he manifested.
The Supreme Lord
relinquished the body which he manifested.
Which he manifested.
To diminish the burden of the earth.
To diminish the burden of the earth.
Just like a magician.
Just like a magician.
He relinquishes one body.
He relinquishes one body.
To accept different ones.
To accept different ones.
Like the fish incarnation and others.
Like the fish incarnation and others.
So, Maharaj, if you could just give me a second here to mute everybody on pre-conferencing. Just one sec. Okay, we're ready.
Okay. So, Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Lord, personality of Godhead, is neither impersonal nor formless, but his body is non-different from him, and therefore he is known as the embodiment of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. In the Brihad Vaishnava Tantra, it is clearly mentioned that anyone who considers the form of Lord Krishna to be made of material energy must be ostracized by all means. And if by chance the face of such an infidel is seen, one must clean himself by jumping in the river with his clothing. The Lord is described as Amrita, or deathless, because he has no material body. Under the circumstances, the Lord's dying or quitting his body is like the jugglery of a magician, Nataha. Yeah. The magician shows by his tricks that he is cut to pieces, burnt to ashes. Yeah? Burnt to ashes? Or made unconscious by hypnotic influences. But all are false shows only. Factually, the magician himself is neither burnt to ashes, nor cut to pieces, nor is he dead or unconscious at any stage of his magical demonstration. Thus, similarly, the Lord has his eternal forms of unlimited variety, in which the fish incarnation, as was exhibited within this universe, is also one. Because there are innumerable universes, somewhere or other, the fish incarnation must be manifesting his pastimes without cessation. In this verse, the particular word dhate, eternally accepted, and not the word ditva, accepted for the occasion, is used. The idea is that the Lord does not create the fish incarnation. He eternally has such a form, and the appearance and disappearance of such an incarnation serves particular purposes. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:24-25, the Lord says, "The impersonalists think that I have no form, that I am formless, but at the present I have accepted a form to serve a purpose, and now I am manifested." Okay, that's what they think. I have accepted a form to serve a purpose, I am manifested. But such speculators are factually without sharp intelligence. Though they may be good scholars in the Vedic literatures, they are practically ignorant of my inconceivable energies and my eternal forms of personality. The reason is that I reserve the power of not being exposed to the non-devotees by my mystic curtain. The less intelligent fools are therefore unaware of my eternal form, which is never to be vanquished and is unborn. Jai, end quote. In the Padma Purana, it is said that those who are envious and always angry at the Lord are unfit to know the actual and eternal form of the Lord. In the Bhagavatam also it is said that the Lord appeared like a thunderbolt to those who were wrestlers. Shishupal at the time of being killed by the Lord could not see him as Krishna, being dazzled by the glare of the Brahma Jyoti. Therefore, the temporary manifestation of the Lord as a thunderbolt to the wrestlers appointed by Kamsa, or the glaring effulgence of the Lord before Shishupal, was relinquished by the Lord, but the Lord as a magician is eternally existent and is never vanquished in any circumstances. Such forms are temporarily shown to the asuras only, and when such exhibitions are withdrawn, the asuras think that the Lord is no more existent, just as a foolish audience thinks that a magician to be burnt to ashes or cut to pieces. The conclusion is that the Lord has no material body, and therefore he is never to be killed or changed by his transcendental body. And then if we go back to the chapter, again, first two cantos of Krishna's lotus feet, and gradually each canto goes higher and higher to Krishna's smiling face. And actually in our group, our Anjana Sudha Academy, and here in Houston we're working very well because with Radha Krishna Das and Harilila and devotees of the Guru Bhakti, right now we've submitted applications again for Lima, Houston, and San Jose, the Vaisheshika's Temple in San Francisco, to all be accredited as Bhakti Bhai Baba Diploma Centers. And it's a bit of a process, you know. So we all have our fingers crossed because the Board of Examiners is meeting right now to decide our fate. But we talked to everybody. Sesha said talk to everybody. So we talked to everybody. And it seems pretty much be established. And we did our work of establishing the whole curriculum like that and how we're going to try and teach it and try and integrate it with the regular temple program. So just by being a part of the temple and participating in morning classes and evening classes, you can become Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Bhai Baba, Bhakti Vedanta, and Bhakti Sarvabhauma. Yeah, just by regular program. So we have our Bhakti Shastri curriculum, and now last year we finished off these first two cantos, and kind of edited all the study guides and put them in a kind of a very satisfying format, you know, with overviews and all this kind of stuff, individual questions. And of course, that's available on our webpage, jayarama.us, and you go to the archives, and I think it's the actual file is PDP, which means Padapama, first two cantos, -CGS, chapter study guides. And that's downloadable. And then, now we're starting on the third canto, because the second year is the third canto. First year is canto 1 and 2, second year, third canto. And actually, we'll have about 20 students who graduated from the first one, from South America and everything else like that. You know? So it's very, very nice, because actually you see it does change your character, it does change your perception. And so now we're trying to get our whole format organized and how to work as a team to develop the curriculum, work with the Mayapur Institute, and make something which is, you know, bhakti, not just shastri. Yeah. The Prabhupada says, you know, somebody can become a very good scholar, you know, in the Vedic literatures, or even in Prabhupada's books, you know? Somebody can memorize Prabhupada's books, the verses, and you know, maybe more the Sanskrit than the purports. But in the end, you not be very much advanced in being a devotee and knowing how to respect other devotees and how to be attached to the mission of the spiritual master like that. So really, you know, the whole thing is studying. It's jnana, but it's with the purpose of bhakti. Anyabhilasita shunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulyena krishna nu shilanam Bhakti Uttama. This is the lecture of devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Rupa Goswami is giving his, you know, people say the Paribhasa Sutra, the essence of the whole book. His definition is very highly crafted, very detailed, very precise definition of what is bhakti, you know. Yeah. So part of the definition is Anyabhilasita Shunyam. So Moraya bilas, yeah, my desire is, right? Anya, none, no. Anya abilas, you know, no other desire. Shunya, zero. Nivishesha shunya body. There's zero other desires. Anya abilasita shunyam. Jnana, karma, anadi vrittam. Vritta means to cover. Like Vrittasura in the sixth canto. He was covering the whole universe with his influence like that. So, yeah, we want devotional service means empowered activity for Krishna with a conscious intention to please Krishna. And secondarily, it shouldn't be covered by any extraneous jnana or other things like that. Yeah? So right now, what we're doing is jnana. You know? But it's not our motive. Our motive is to advance in devotional service, at least some degree, probably. And if you've got some good intellectual ability, then you like to show that off. If you're a good cook, you like to show that off, you know. If you can dress nicely, you'd like to dress nicely in devotional clothing and put your tilak on very nice, you know. So, we're attached, you know. But the goal is, through the process of the nectar of devotion, bhakti rasa vidha sindhu, to go through and come to the point of being, you know, in uttama bhakti, vairi bhakti, raganuga, you know, and bhava. And then prema. And then prema itself can also be intensified, you know, to different ways like that. We can go on expanding our flavor so Krishna can relish us in more and more different flavors. You know. So, and the media is Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, Chahari Krishna reads Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, and all the supplementary corollary literatures. So in this first chapter, Canto, of course, as we always mention, is the whole background of like why the book was written, under what circumstances, who's talking to who, who's speaking, who's listening, who's asking questions. And now the whole background is being described, how Bhagavatam was spoken because Krishna had left. Mm-hmm. Who's going to protect us? You know, I remember when we got the news that Prabhupada left his body, he was doing breakfast in the temple in Berkeley. And Mother Madana Sini was just telling people individually, and there was no announcement. Nobody made an announcement. These people just stopped taking prasadam and went into the temple room and started the kirtan. And I remember we went in there, and my first thought in front of Radha Gokulananda was, oh, okay, now Prabhupada's gone. Now you have to take care of us. And it was my first kind of spontaneous thought. You know? Yeah, and that happens. And when Ram left the kingdom, he empowered his shoes, you know, to give all the Shakti that Bharat needed to do it. Yeah. Yeah. So we had the morning program, everything else. When we have to go out on book distribution, preaching, and you got to face all kinds of scary people. Who's going to take care of us? I think it was Bhakti Siddhanta Das. He would worship his Shilas very strictly, and he would take some of them on Sankirtan around his neck. And then he said, they distributed the books. I was just their servant. They would force the people to take the books. So yeah, we do that. You know, when we go out, we have to have Krishna, some incarnation of Krishna, to take care of us. And in general, in the Kali Yuga, Krishna incarnates as Srimad Bhagavatam. So now is this very nice story about right before, you know, Pariksha was born. He's growing up. I guess he's a grown up man by now, because he becomes the what do you call it? He becomes the king. So he's a grown up fellow with that. He's married.
Who is it?
Like that. Yeah, married.
Marada.
Yeah, okay. Mute your microphone. Yeah. So he's a grown up fellow. And maybe, I don't know, maybe 25, at least 25 years old, because he's not going to be married before he's 25. And probably not going to turn the kingdom over to him the day after he gets married. So maybe 35 years old, like that. After the Battle of Kurukshetra. And it's describing this whole scene now, and I mentioned before that, Arjuna, he doesn't go into samadhi right away. As soon as Krishna leaves, he could just like forget all these problems, forget all this administrative work, forget all this, you know, Vaishnava aparad, forget fighting, you know, get Prabhupada's this and that, and all the people, just go into samadhi. But he waits until he gets back to Where is he going back to? Hastinapur. Yeah, yeah. And there he tells Yudhisthira what's happened. And we actually can read this. It says that he tells him what happens, and he himself starts to remember all these things. And then all Krishna's pastimes. By remembering Krishna's pastimes, he becomes more and more like fired up, you know, more enthusiastic, stimulated to focus on Krishna. Okay. Text number 30 says, because of the Lord's pastimes and activities and because of his absence, it appeared that Arjuna forgot the instructions left by the personality of Godhead because of Krishna's lila of disappearing and doing things. But factually, this was not the case. And again, he became Lord of his senses. Because of his possessing spiritual assets, the doubts of duality were completely cut off. Thus, he was free from the three modes of material nature and placed in transcendence. There was no longer any chance of his becoming entangled in birth and death, for he was freed from material form. So he's gone. Yeah, Prithvi Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in the same level of existence at the end of his life. He would sit in his little bhajan kutir outside his house, and his family would bring some kind of regulated simple food or something, and some arrangement was there for bathing. Hello, Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
So arrangement was there for bathing and things like that. But he was like halfway.
I thought there might be some, because I got things going on. Okay.
Yeah, can you, Prabhu, can you close your microphone? Yeah. We're hearing all your colorful language. Yeah. Anyway, so he was halfway there, maybe even less. People would come and they'd say, oh, daddy, here's your lunch. And he'd say, ah, haribo, haribo, you know. And time to bathe, yeah, yeah, he remembered to do it. So he was coming back and just touching in with his body maybe every now and again. But it was no longer like a real necessity, you know, maybe some connection for some reason like that. You think even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the biography, says he asked him to hang around a little bit longer. And so because of that, he stayed and maintained some contact, you know, with the world. So Arjuna, text 31, he's come to that level. You know, it says, because of his possessing spiritual assets. So in the history of the drama, which Rupa Goswami uses, of course, for Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, these are called vasanas. And Bhojadev Maharaj, different people talk about these. That these are necessary to experience the feelings that the actors experience. So same way, we say agyata sukriti. So we have to possess these spiritual assets and maybe even not be agyata, because we're actually consciously doing these things to develop these qualities. Of course, a very famous verse is the cowherd boys could only play with Krishna after accumulating heaps and mountains of pious activities for previous lifetimes. Three kinds of spiritual activities, three kinds of pious activities. One is for liberation, one is to get a good sense gratification in the future, and the third is to advance in devotional service. You know? So Arjuna had that. He accumulated he did his work. And because of that, then there was no more doubts about duality, and he could see Krishna in everything at that point. You know? So the three modes of nature don't work anymore at that point. You see that Krishna is controlling this world. Krishna is making this happen. Krishna is making the sun rise directly, you know, like that. You know. And then he was free from birth and death. He was free from material form. What happened next? Text 32. Upon hearing of Lord Krishna's returning to his abode, and upon understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, Maharaj Yudhisthira decided to go back home, back to Godhead. 33. Kunti, after overhearing Arjuna's telling of the end of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna, engaged in the devotional service of the transcendental personality of Godhead with full attention, and thus gained release from the course of material existence. Mm. Yeah. So one after one, everybody in their own position is understanding and doing their job. Yeah. Yeah. So Uddhava, he wanted to take the same course of activity, But Krishna said, no, except for you, I don't see anybody who can take care of the devotees. So you please stay here. And he was saying, how can I tolerate the separation? So he said, you go to Vadavik Ashram and stay with my incarnation of Narayan, like that. So feeling that it was a service to Krishna, and therefore more intense association, Uddhava didn't go into samadhi. 34, the supreme unborn Lord Krishna caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies, and thus he relieved the burden of the world. This action was like picking out a thorn with a thorn, though both are the same to the controller. In today's verse, the supreme Lord relinquished the body which he manifested to diminish the burden of the world. Like one after another. Now Krishna's finally himself going. The Yadus are going, so he's going. Just like a magician, he relinquished one body to accept different ones, like the fish incarnation and others. So here you can see that it's a fact. The Sukadeva Goswami Sudha Goswami. Sudha Goswami is making it very clear that Krishna is not some kind of incarnation of something impersonal. He's taking the time, and the Acharyas and Prabhupada are making it very clear. In the next verses, we'll talk about how Kali Yuga is coming in, and then Maharaj Yudhishthira is going to make all these different arrangements, for the protection of the devotees. He decides to go back to Godhead, but before he goes into samadhi, he makes sure everything's properly arranged, So yeah, it's very, very important. We should take vanaprastha, take sannyas. But before we do that, we make sure everything's set up properly. Lord Kapila made sure that Kardamuni made sure that his wife was taken care of properly by her son. And even when Kapila left, he saw there was no necessity of staying and protecting his mother's body because she already achieved transcendental connection. So he left her body in the care of some servants, serving maids, and he left like that too. So it's kind of scary, but it's getting ready for death, And then we're very ready in that sense. Then to go back over the purport a little bit, what have we got here? One thing that struck me was that in the very beginning, Prabhupada says in the Brihad Vaishnava Tantra, it is clearly mentioned that anyone who considers the form of Lord Krishna to be made of material energy must be ostracized by all means. You got to jump in the river, Okay, this is interesting. I was thinking about this because it's just criticism about, all of our ISKCON gurus are bogus gurus like that. Only Uttama Adhikari can be guru. So people challenge you, say, are you Uttama Adhikari? And especially one of the challenges is Nikunja Juno Ratikeli Siddhai Yayali Bir Tirapekshaniya. Are you engaged in the confidential service of Radha and Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan? Like that, That's a Guruvastakam. So Guru Prasad Swami actually has a quotation from, I think it was a lecture in London, or else a room conversation, and Prabhupada was talking about the Guruvastakam, and he came to that verse and didn't make any commentary. And he said, this is the prerogative of Vishwanath Chakrabarti, Thakur. So indicating that, Prabhupada himself wasn't going to talk about this, and maybe whether he was or he wasn't, he was manifesting the position that it's not necessary for me to do my job, that I'm going to be in this level, like that. But beyond that, even another perspective, it's still true, because for example, Srila Prabhupada, he installed, Radha Gokulananda in Berkeley. As I've heard the explanation, there were three deities all made from the same mold. Radha Gopijana Balaba, I think they are, in Boston. Radha Gokulananda in Berkeley. And Radha Madhava in Mayapur. And so they're all the same in the form. And very nice, very beautiful. But of course, if you're a Madhyama Adhikari, you've taken initiation, bona fide spiritual master, and by him you're engaged in worshiping the deities, then you're Brahmachari, you have to bathe, Radha Gokulananda. You take them down from the altar, take off their clothes, and the forms are not presentable before common people undressed like that. Like, Again, we won't go into the confidential discussion, but they haven't got full clothes built on their body, you know. And so because of that, you know, they have to be dressed. But here you are in a brahmachari body, you know, bathing Srimati Radharani and drying her with a towel and rubbing fragrant oils on her body. You know, you can't do that, you know. At least to some degree, you've got to be able to control your mind. And this, it takes some kind of perspective. Okay, I'm a servant of Mother Yashoda, and here a little boy and girl, Radha and Krishna, and I have to bathe them like my little boy and girl. So, you know, at least for some time, you have to be able to maintain some perspective. And so it may be artificial. You can't keep the attitude all the time, but at least for like, you know, a few minutes during the puja and stuff, you can keep that attitude and keep your natural, you know, physical reactions from going off in your mind and seeing the form of the opposite sex and massaging you with oil, these kind of things. You're not Ramananda Roy, but at least for, you know, 3 minutes, you've got to be Ramananda Roy. You're 3 minutes of Ramananda Royhood. You know? So, yeah, so that kind of guru, you know, Majjhima Adhikari, he can participate in the confidential pastimes of Radha and Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan. And it's not the highest level, but also it's not the lowest level. It's a very practical level where he's beginning, or she is beginning, to really, you know, do this, be able to control these things, get some real positive taste about these things. Yeah, Krishna is a person. You know, Krishna is a person on the psychological level. Krishna is a person, you know, on different levels like that, different realities. Maybe some, yeah, it's just like, I can't see the path perfectly yet, but there's enough light to start walking. And if I'm a little careful and watch my footsteps, you know, then I can start walking, you know, like that. And the goal is not really clear, but I can see, yeah, over there is, that's the mountain where I'm going. There's a city. I'm lost in the jungle. There's all the lights of the town. Okay, and there's a pathway. Okay. So it's a good level. Other people who are walking in the jungle with no pathway, you can be part Pradarshika Guru. You can say, hey, come over here. There's a pathway. Are you sure? Yeah, there's a pathway. Where does it go? Well, look, you see it goes across the valley, and it goes to the city there. We'll get out of this mess with these tigers and snakes and stuff. Right? So that's what I was thinking, that even if you don't realize, you know, the Krishna's form from the highest level, you know, it's still in the Majjhima Adhikari level. You can have a very practical experience of it that can then lead you to very practically applying the process, you know. Sometimes some medical thing, one doctor, for example, one of our friends, he had to have implant for the membrane, what's it called, the eardrum. Mm-hmm. And so when the doctor's putting it in, he asked the guy this, that, you know. So you help the doctor, you know, a little higher, a little lower, whatever. So at some point we can not just take our medicine like, you know, unconscious people, but now we can tell the doctor what we're feeling, what the reaction is, and therefore he can help us take our medicine better. So this Majjhima Adhikari level of appreciating that Krishna as a form is very important. You know? That's what I was realizing with that. Let me just go ahead and pause here. And I have some more notes like that, you know. But maybe somebody has some questions or comments. Anybody have anything they want to say or ask?
Okay, I've unmuted everybody in pre-conferencing. So, anyone has a question or a comment?
I'd like to say something. I think it's pretty amazing, you know, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada that came here. Well, advented in Kali Yuga, and then Prabhupada came here to the Western countries to give Krishna consciousness to all the fallen souls. I mean, here it says that, you know, you just take a look at someone who's who thinks that Krishna is made of material energy and then jump in the river with their clothing. But, I mean, think about all the non-devotees and offenders and just fallen people that, you know, I know that I certainly was, and instead of doing that, just handing out Krishna, you know, to everyone, and it's just amazing how kind Srila Prabhupada is and merciful Lord Chaitanya is. That's all. I was struck by that.
It's also a fact. I mean, if you do go out, Parasura Dharma Shastra, you know, Prabhupada recommends that. But in there, Prabhupada says basically, I mean, Parasura says, if for example, he gives different atonements for different people. If you make an animal work too hard and he hurts himself, you've got to atone for that. And he gives different atonements. But he says for killing a cow or for a girl who unnecessarily aborts her own embryo and has an abortion, he says then there's no atonement possible like that. You know? He says she should be like expelled from the community. And he said, what to speak of talking to her? Because anybody who even sees her face immediately becomes sinful like that.
Wow.
So everybody we're seeing, we're going around, they're all killing cows, they're having abortions. They're doing so many Nessian activities. So it's a fact, you know. But we have this kavacha in terms of neck beads, tilak, you know. And then we're chanting all the time, remembering Krishna. We have our motivation is to serve Krishna. That's why we're out there. So a lot of it bounces off of our deflector fields, you know. And then we go back in the evening and we take a bath in the Gaurartik, you know, in the kirtan. And, otherwise, like you're saying, it's a fact. Subdhamana Maharaj said one time in Manipur, people are, of course, very pious in these Brahmin areas. And he said that the kind of people who live in the West, if someone like that just walked down the street and people knew what kind of person he was, he said the house lady would throw all the cooked food in the house out, you know, take a bath, and wash the whole house. Just to have seen such a person, you know, like that in Manipur. Of course, it's changing, you know, yeah. So, thank you. So, Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hi.
Any other comments or questions about impersonalism? I get a few more notes. I don't know.
Maharaj.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for a nice class. This is Janas Priha.
Janas Priha Jai.
Should some of the gurus make their disciples aware of what you said? Or it seems like they don't disclose whether, you know, they're on that level or not. So the disciples think, and when they're singing the samsara prayers, they actually think that applies to their spiritual master.
Yeah, so I'll repeat your question for our audience here. Janas Priya Prabhu is asking if some of the gurus in ISKCON should inform their disciples about this idea about, you know, Madhi Madhikari Guru, and because many of them think that their guru is automatically Uttamadhikari, and automatically, you know. It's a very nice question, you know. Two things, you know. One thing I remember that Ribati Nandan Swami, he was a sannyasi, he was in Berkeley, actually San Francisco, temple was there then, and he said that he'd asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, some of your disciples think that you're conscious of everything that they're doing. If they're washing the temple room floor, you're conscious of that. And I remember before I was initiated, everything else, I was visiting the temple and going to work outside. And I remember I would come in the morning because I was on the swing shift, so I didn't have to go to work until 4 o'clock. So I'd come to the temple and I'd wash the temple room floor every morning. And actually, I had exactly that thought, like, was Prabhupada conscious of all this and everything else, you know? And so he asked Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada said, I am not the super soul. Yeah. He said, Prabhupada said, when I need to know something about a disciple, Krishna informs me, and usually externally, like that. And I think he said, Prabhupada gave an example that he was in Mayapur, and he was wondering, how is my temple president in San Francisco, Bhakta Das, you know? And he said the next day, you know, somebody would come from San Francisco, some like, you know, sober, sane, nice devotee. And so then Prabhupada would ask him, how is Bhakta Das, you know? And internally he could feel, oh, Krishna has sent this person. It's not just a chance thing, you know? And so he would have like a confidence in this person's thing like that. So even Prabhupada saying himself that even he was like, you know, confirming things by objective sources. It wasn't that God told me to destroy the Twin Towers in a dream. No, it's like, you know, yeah, maybe God tells you in a dream, but then you open the Quran and exactly it says, and may the towers of evil fall down in the city of something, you know. Anyway, Guru Sadhu Shastra. So that's one thing Prabhupada himself and how he was presenting himself, you know, was so many times, you know, he many times Prabhupada would say, no, we heard this. I remember one lecture, Prabhupada was saying, you should only accept Uttama Adhikari as guru. Okay. And then a few minutes later he said, I have never claimed to be Uttama Adhikari. Like that. And then at the end of the lecture he said, so, if you engage sincerely in devotional service, all these different things will become clear. Like that, you know. So, going on and reading and studying, there's one exact citation I have in my notes. Actually, it's in terms of Prithu Maharaj. And the reciters, they start to glorify Prithu as being incarnation of Krishna, all these things like that. And then Prithu Maharaj says, well, no, I haven't done that yet, you know. And so you shouldn't glorify me like that until I do it. But then the reciters, they look at the sages, and the sages kind of like smile and nod and indicate to them, go on, you know. So they go on, and then Prithu tolerates it because the sages have said to do it. So very interesting. You know? So in the purport, I think it's right there, the Prabhupada says that even if one is a Shakti Avesh avatar, incarnation of God, he should not publicly present himself as such. He said, intelligent people will distinguish this, and they'll begin to discriminate this, and they will, what's the word, like make it known to the common people. Like that. So I think same way too that Prabhupada is following the same principle that even if you're on the Uttama Adhikari platform, you don't publicly broadcast it. You know? Sometimes to some intimate devotees, as I understand, Prabhupada was almost saying that. But even in those circumstances, what I hear Prabhupada, even still, he wouldn't. For example, there's a story that Hridayananda Maharaj says that he was sitting with Karandar one time with Prabhupada in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada said, there has been no time in my life when I've ever forgotten Krishna. And so then he said, do you understand what I'm telling you? And Hridayananda Maharaj said, he nodded, Karandar nodded, and Hridayananda Maharaj says, at that point, he didn't understand what Prabhupada was saying, but he didn't want to appear like an idiot or something, you know, along, you know. So, you know, the inference would be that Prabhupada is Nitya Siddha personality descended to this world. So on, you know. So it's my understanding that even someone like Prabhupada, he would give indications, but even he would, other things too, Rupa Goswami says, if you're on the, I think the platform of Raganuga Bhakti, want to speak of something else, maybe it's Bhava Bhakti, he said, you do not display this to common people. It's like if you have a variable valuable jewel, you don't go walking around the streets with it. No, you show it to certain friends under certain circumstances. You know? So that's the first thing I would understand. Even if you are on that platform, and almost the opposite is true. If you're allowing people to publicly glorify you and things like that, or doing it yourself and saying that you're on the Uttama Adhikari platform, then it's almost guaranteed you're not like that. It's a confidential thing. Publicly, it's enough to be a Majjhima Adhikari, to be following your spiritual master according to the standard. When Prabhupada left, I think maybe other people had the same experience. We were confused, and everybody was confused as far as I know. You know? And so his kind of idea was that we were used to the fact that the guru had to be an acharya with a big A, Uttama Adhikari. So out of greed or just confusion or so many things after Prabhupada left right away, that was this big standard that, you know, all the people that Prabhupada has selected, and my cell phone's going off in a second here. I'm pushing the button on the side. Okay, options, send message. I'll call you back. So wait till Charlie, it's a radio show. He wants us to call him. That Prabhupada was, you know, that was the thing, and I remember specifically speaking some of the disciples of our local zonal acharya, they were showing me his picture and saying, Prabhu, you know, he can create universes like that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to, like, you know, say, well, maybe under proper circumstances, if Krishna wanted it, you know. But later on, it became obvious he wasn't creating universes, but he was being honest about the fact that he'd fallen down. He was turning his beer receipts into the treasure and saying, I've fallen down. Stop this artificial worship. Yeah. So we've gone through a lot of things. In just a few. When was it? Maybe 2 years ago or something, I was in Lima with Jayapataka Maharaj was there. And he's very much the acharya there and everything else, you know. So I asked him in a class. I said, to be a guru in ISKCON, do you have to be an acharya with a big A? Or is it sufficient to be an acharya with a little A? You know? And he said, it's sufficient to be acharya with little A. He said that the big A, that depends on Krishna. You know, that happens. So on. So all the people who took this position of acharyas after Prabhupada left, not all of them, at least some of them, I know Hidayananda Maharaj and Jayapataka Maharaj, others, they've all said that they really changed their opinion about what's going on. And I think from what I understand from traveling and everything else, still there's not, like you say, not enough education about this, you know, that level like that, you know. And so, no, I agree. I think it's because ISKCON tends to be, in the, I don't know, what do you say about ISKCON? The ISKCON I associate with tends to be in the mode of passion. And it's a big institution. There are leaders. People follow the leaders. So they venerate the gurus. You know, they venerate the sannyasis. They venerate people with money. They venerate people with political power. You know, different things like that. You know, the tech. So it's, you know, yeah, within... So what I'm talking about, right, thinking about it, it seems in some ways it'll always be there, and the different scriptural things too, that the common people, you know, will always kind of like see that way, and they'll artificially do that. It doesn't matter how many times you'll preach about it, Kanista Adhikaris, you know, will automatically, they'll do that. They'll artificially try and push people up above their position because they want to be glorified themselves. My guru is the greatest guru. You know, my guru is the greatest guru. Yeah, my guru can kill your guru. Okay, whatever. Yeah. And so it's always going to be there amongst Kanista Adhikaris. But that's why it is very good, this Shastric study and stuff like that, that people should be versed enough and they realize the stuff enough. So I think we're doing it, you know, but I think it still needs to be done, like you say. It definitely is like not contamination and so on. That's my conclusion. Hare Krishna. Now I turn the microphone over to you, Janice Priya.
Maharaj, I'd just like to ask something a little further on this point. But shouldn't a disciple look to his or her spiritual master as on the highest platform, whether they are on or not? I mean, wouldn't it be an offense for the disciple to not think that? Because, you know, we know that, the prayers, you know, the spiritual master should, well, Srila Prabhupada himself said that the disciple should look at the spiritual master as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he should be worshipped like God, you know, as like God, because he's, you know, the most confidential servitor of God. So maybe, you know, that the guru is not on the Uttama Adhikari platform and others may not see him or her such, but isn't it an offense for a disciple to not feel that their guru is like on that level? I hope I'm being clear. I don't know, expressing properly, but
yeah, very nice question. Yeah, very nice. And again, this is a very big topic, philosophical discussion. Even I've heard, you know, sannyasis discussing this point. But pulling my Upadeshamrita from around my neck, where Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says you should have it, and opening it right up to text number 5, the last purport. This is such a nice purport. It's a nice basis, you know, for discussing these things. And the Ritviks, whoever they are, always like to quote this one also. But to me, it puts everything in very nice perspective. So Prabhupada says the very last purport. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami advises a devotee to be intelligent enough to distinguish between Kanista Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. Okay, we should be able to distinguish that. The devotee should also know his own position and should not try to imitate a devotee situated on a higher platform. Prabhupada mentions this point in the Isopanishad. Several times he mentioned this point about don't imitate. That's not the way to advance. Okay. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given some practical hints to the effect that an Uttamadhikari Vaishnava can be recognized by his ability to convert many fallen souls to Vaishnavism. Okay, now here we go. One should not become a spiritual master unless he has attained the platform of Uttama Adhikari. Next sentence. A neophyte Vaishnava or a Vaishnava situated on the intermediate platform can also accept disciples. It seems like a contradiction. But let's go on. But such disciples must be on the same platform. I was thinking that means only Kanista, Kanishya, Kanista, only Majjhima, Kanista, Majjhima. But I think Prabhupada is saying, no, they will automatically not be able to go beyond his platform. They must be on the same platform.
Yeah.
And it should be understood that they cannot advance very well toward the ultimate goal of life under his insufficient guidance. Therefore, a disciple should be careful to accept an Uttama Adhikari as a spiritual master. And these are both indefinite pronouns, articles. So, to my experience, this is exactly, you know, what Prabhupada had established all the time he was here, what he preaches in his books. He didn't change everything at the moment of death, or we didn't become different at the time when he left his body. You know, devotees would be empowered by Prabhupada. They learned something. They would get surrender. And they would go out to Germany. They would go out to, you know, to different places. They would preach, you know. And then people would come, and they would train them, you know. And maybe they can't train them to stimulate their bhava in the mood of Radharani, but at least they can teach them how to put on tilak. At least they can teach them how to do so many things. I know one disciple from South America who was critical of Sridayananda Maharaj because he felt that he was kind of like putting himself between himself and Prabhupada. But the next breath he said, but I'm always indebted to him because he taught me how to be attached to Srila Prabhupada. Like that. So I think that's the thing, is that we see our spiritual master what he is. 434, Prabhupada says, blind faith is condemned. So that means our faith in our Diksha Guru, as we understand him, as we understand the personal relationship, you know, it's very practical, you know. And if he's on the Madhyama Adhikari level, he should be informing us of that. That he's on the level of Nishta. Maybe he's on the level of Ruchi. Maybe he's on the level of Asaktis, you know, like that. You know? But not on the level of Baba. He knows it. He's intelligent. Sometimes he may forget it. Okay. And then the disciple says, but Maharaj Prabhupada says this. He says, oh, thank you. You're right. Thank you. You know. So we can offer our suggestions and corrections, but very politely, and always remembering that Prabhupada is our Acharya for everybody. And Prabhupada's not going to take it lightly. And even many, many stories of this, Prabhupada getting really, really heavy when devotees trying to jump over their group leaders or trying to minimize them like that. You know? At the same time, when somebody, Raghunath Das Goswami, even when he was personally present in front of Lord Chaitanya, he would ask his questions through Sarup Damodar. They'd all be together present. And you can look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Sri Damodar would say, oh, Raghu has a question, like that. And the Lord Chaitanya would say, what is it? And Raghu would kind of bump in Sri Damodar. And he would say, well, he wants to know how to worship the Shalagram Shila you gave him. And Lord Chaitanya would look at him and he would say, well, you know, I don't know so much. Sri Damodar, he knows more than me. So you should ask him. But since you've asked him, I think you should do this and this and this and this, you know. So even though they were physically present, the parampara was there. And yeah, Mahaprabhu was Mahaprabhu. One disciple I know, he asked Subhadamana Maharaj about this. I feel so much attachment to Prabhupada, and I feel maybe I'm being unfaithful to you or something, you know. And he said, Subhadamana Maharaj told him, he said, Prabhu, you know, nobody replaces Srila Prabhupada, like that. And it's such a clear and nice understanding that, yeah, you're my Diksha Guru, you're my older god brother, you're my husband, you're born in India, I was born in the West, you know, you're older than I am, whatever. There's so many reasons, Trinada Pisa Nichena, to respect people. You gave me the mantra, you know, okay. And gradually it becomes clear, but then Prabhasi Uttamadhikari. And my guru is on a Majjhimadhikari platform. So, but Krishna will adjust it like that. And if he makes a mistake, it doesn't matter. You know, Krishna will adjust it, you know, like that. And we can correct it later on like that, you know. So I can have full faith in him in terms of his position like that. So that's my understanding. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. That was very thorough and very complete and thought-provoking answer. And thank you.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Actually, it's 12:30. It's time to finish our class here. Yeah. The only other notes I had, I was going to go in public quotes 724 and 725. So if you look those up, they're actually the purports. Bhagavad Gita as it is not the Bhagavad Gita. I've got to say that. It's the Bhagavad Gita as it is. The purports, Prabhupada goes to Chaitanya Charitamrita. He goes to the Goswamis. It takes you way beyond just Bhagavad Gita. And that's why it's some way a little confusing to us, because Prabhupada's been in very advanced topics through the media of Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. So 724, 725, Prabhupada talks all about, you know, more about the thing of impersonalism. And to me, it's spread everywhere. I mean, it's just like, you got to have a philosophy. You got to have some idea of what is life. You know, if you're just like an animal, just responding to your senses and eating and sleeping, which many people do to some degree, okay, then you just carry on like that. You're just a carmi, you know. So most people, different things, a human being, different things happen. They make you think. And where do you get your answers? From movies. You watch movies. You watch The Lion King. You watch The Mummy. You know, you watch Harry Potter. You know, I was on the airplane coming back from India one time. I noticed that 5 out of the 7 movies on there had spiritual themes, at least transcendental. The Mummy was okay. What was that? It was like that death is just the beginning. You know, mystical powers, win the girl, you know, this and that, get the gold, you know. But no, there was something about, yeah, it's not the end of it. There's something more, you know. In other words, directly a Christian theme, exactly, it was a Christian story, you know. The Lion King, I think, Pariksit Prabhu, he was in charge of that whole thing. So philosophy squeaks through, you know. And, of course, our predominating philosophy, Prabhupada says, is science, that all, just like Kannada, out of the Sadarshan, everything is coming from atoms and molecules, homosexuality, alcoholism, mother's affection for her child, you know, language, it's all coming through evolution from atoms and molecules. And this, whatever, it's still there. And then what are atoms? Atoms are not particles. You know, atoms have some properties of being particles, but actually they are waves. Which again takes us back to impersonal, you know, philosophy. And so I can't kind of finish here, but it's just, you know, behind everything, you know, we're going to find a philosophy, you know? And this philosophy pervades things, and so people become so impersonal in their dealings, you know, and how they deal life and everything else like that. And then they become dissatisfied. They look for sense gratification. So the more we realize Krishna as a person and a transcendental person, my God, then it manifests these personal qualities. They just, you know, wipe away the impersonal view like that. So I guess we've got to maybe kind of finish here. I guess we have to kind of thank everybody. Happy Ekadasi. We're already noontime here. And I guess about it. Okay. Shilpa Panchi Jai.
Hi, Shilpa.
Hi. Hari Bom.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Here we go.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.